Here we are. What is it? I got August up on my wall now. So it's May 20. Let me check the computer here. It is May 26th, Sunday, 2013. We are going to seriously begin now the mysteries of life. And here's my long title. We are going to look at the mysteries of life. The questions that people ask all the time, not the biblical mysteries, not the mysteries that we're supposed to be good stewards of. We all understand those things, because Paul understands them. You understand Paul, you understand the mysteries. We're going to look at the daily things that people ask and people question, people doubt, and we ourselves get into some of these things, even though we know the answers. So the title is The Mysteries of Life, Explored, Examined, Expounded, Exhorted Upon, Explained with Exceeding Simplicity and Plainness of Speech by Exalting the Excellent and Faithful Word of Truth. So we're just going to be able to go to the book and answer any question that people have just about the issues of life. And maybe I should throw in there the issues, mysteries of the issues of life or something like that. I don't know. So let's do just a fast, quick, zippity-doo-dah review here. And let's look at Acts 18:26. And let me just point out why we're doing this and how we're going to do it. Acts 18:26. And this is where Aquila and Priscilla took Apollos unto them and expounded unto him the way of God more perfectly. Expounded. Now, to expound, because we need to expound the way of God more perfectly to these Christians, to these gospel people, to these modern Christians, to these rock Christians, to these lost people in this world, which probably are the same crowds that we're talking about. That would be my conclusion, but we need to expound them. Expound is to make clear, to open it up, to examine it, to help them see what we're talking about here, and the way of God more perfectly. We know in Matthew and Luke that Jesus taught the way of God. That's what all the people, that's what they said to him. We know that thou teachest the way of God. So when Paul comes along, which is what our King James Bible, you know, our King James Bible's got everything. I think this is where people get mixed up, bunny trail here. They don't realize that that Bible is from the beginning until the end, which is another beginning. Why they try to apply that whole book, it's just the craziest notion. But it's an amazing book. When you've got one book that you can read that talks about the pre-beginning and beginning, all through history, how God operated and worked with humans, with people, then how he came up with his own people, and how he provided the answer for the sin that was in the world that he did not, I mean, it just, there's the devil, and he did that whole thing, and how God provided for that, and how he came down himself, and then how the world just killed him and went on with, came back and tried to offer himself again, and they killed the preachers, and they went to Paul, and then we got the second coming, then we got eternity past all that stuff. That's all in one book. That's an amazing thing. So we would like to expound especially on Paul, the way of God more perfectly. We could go through the history stuff. We could go through the Old Testament. We could go through Psalms and Proverbs. We could go through Hebrews, which we've done. Maybe I could get people interested. Well, if we want to get people interested, we change the music. We change the Bibles. That's not the point. The point here is to expound on the way of God more perfectly, just like they did to Apollos. Then we mentioned the word exhorting. Let's go to Titus. Make this real quick. This is a review, but we're just going to do it quickly here. If we quick run to Titus, we see that we are to exhort. And the exhortation, Titus 1:9. This is a preacher. This is a pastor. This is a missionary. This is a bishop as such. This is somebody that's going to teach people something. And it says here, hold fast the faithful word as he hath been taught. Keeping in mind that people are not being taught the faithful word anymore. That he may be able by sound doctrine both to exhort and to convince the gainsayers. So our purpose of this website, the purpose of this series, is to expound on these issues, show them the answers, and do it in an exhortation fashion here, so maybe we can convince not only the gainsayers, but the confused, but the ones that have been deceived too by the deceivers who they themselves have been deceived. We're going to try that. Let's go to Titus 2.15. Titus has got a couple of good things that need to be exhorted here. Titus 2.15. These things speak, that is chapter 2, 1 through 14. That is the manner of life. That is what people get tired of me talking about. I know for a fact that people get tired of this stuff. It says, these things speak and exhort. And exhort is to incite, is the word that the 1828 uses, incite by words. It's to get people to respond. It's to do what you can to get them to respond. And they fight back, and they give you excuses, and they say, well, what else should we do then if we can't? And there it is. You know, there's the stuff. That's the stuff we're supposed to speak and exhort. And it says rebuke. That's a tough one. With all authority. Let no man despise thee. Men despise us for this. We know that Paul says to tell people the truth is going to make them make us their enemy. We know that. Okay. So anyway, let's just we've already been over this. Let's keep going here. Look at 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 2. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 2. It says here, preach the word, be instant in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort. And it does say, with all long suffering, okay, I'm trying, and doctrine. And everybody wants to throw out doctrine and just be happy and take God's love and the whole spiel. But then we read verse 3, where the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine. What is sound doctrine? Titus chapter 2, it says, but speak of all the things which become sound doctrine. This is what we're supposed to exhort. This is what we're supposed to expound upon. This is what we're supposed to tell people and talk to people and help them see, not in a damning fashion, not in a bold, meaning loud, jerk way, just showing them. This is what the book says. This is what the Bible says. This is how you can please God. Now, without having to walk the perfect line, which is what everybody thinks they are, which we'll get into that eventually here as time goes on. We already know the answer is conceded and all that stuff. We have to keep something in mind. Paul talks about it, 2 Corinthians 3.12. He says, 2 Corinthians 3.12, he says, seeing that we have such hope, and we do have such hope. You go back and read the hope he's talking about. We have that hope. And he says, we use great plainness of speech. Great plainness of speech. I guess I should put that in the title up there. Simplicity and great plainness of speech. This is not complicated stuff. It's just very simply put. And they say that the King James Bible is archaic, and it's not. Which we can talk about it if they'd like us to. And then we go to 2 Corinthians, which we already are. Go back to chapter 1, verse 12. And he says here, for our rejoicing is this, the testimony of our conscience, that in simplicity and godly sincerity, which I need to add that to the title, with exceeding simplicity and godly sincerity and great plainness of speech. That's what he talks about. That's how he wants to do this. He's sincere. He's godly sincere and in simplicity. Then, of course, we go to chapter 11. And he says in chapter 11 that one of his biggest fears is the fact that our minds should be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. And the world out there makes it so simple. God loves you, and God loves everybody. So let's just live, give your life to Jesus. That's pretty simple, but it's wrong. It's not right. But the truth, rightly divided, is extremely simple. And it's truth. And it's right. But like Paul did, we fight our mind and we fight the flesh. It's still there. Anyway, those are the things that kind of explain exploring, examining, expounding, exhorting, explaining with exceeding simplicity and godly sincerity and great plainness of speech by exalting that excellent and faithful word of truth. There we go. That's the title for this thing. So we've been over those things a little bit. Now, we won't go through them tonight, but we also looked at the Bible mysteries that are in the Bible itself. And we know that one of the mysteries that God talks about is His thoughts and His ways are not our ways and they're not our thoughts. But yet, if we study that Bible, rightly divide that thing, we can see God's actions, we can see what God says He would do, we can see what God says He did, and we can see what God says to us for today, and we can begin to get His thoughts, and we can begin to understand His ways. But you got to do it through the book, rightly divide it. As Paul calls it, it's the way of God more perfectly. We can learn God's ways and God's actions are different in each dispensation. And yet, He's an unchanging God. He just kept providing more and more ways for a people to do it the way God had initially described it. As He says in Ephesians chapter 1, let's look in Ephesians chapter 1. He says, according as He hath chosen us in Him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and without blame before Him in love. And He's always made that possibility possible in each dispensation. So, it is a more excellent way, as Paul talks about it. Now, these mysteries we looked at, which we won't look at again tonight, let's just list them. So if people hear this for the first time, every one of these mysteries is explainable by rightly dividing a King James Bible, looking to Paul for the details. You know, the way of God more perfectly. The mystery of godliness. The mystery of Christ and the church. The mystery of the blindness of Israel. The mystery of iniquity. The mystery of Gentiles being made fellow heirs. That's Paul's gospel right there. The mystery of Christ, mystery of the gospel, the mystery of God's will, the mystery of the wisdom of God, the mystery of the rapture, as we call it, the mystery of God, that's mentioned, and the mystery of the woman, the whore, the woman, the Babylon. Now, let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 14. See, Paul understands them all. 1 Corinthians 14. Is it 1 Corinthians 14 too? I don't think so. So maybe it's 2 Corinthians 14 too. I don't think 2 Corinthians goes to 14. In fact, I'm sure it doesn't. It goes to 13. Okay. Maybe it's 1 Corinthians 4 2, maybe. I don't know. 4 2. Nope. I got the itches here tonight. I think I can find it though. For Paul, I think it's 14. Maybe it's 14:12. No, it's one of those. It's real close to there, though. It's in 14:15, 16. Even though I speak. Anyway. Paul understands them all. It's in Corinthians somewhere. And so if Paul understands them, so can we. Now, we did talk a little bit about, I think this might have even been last week or so, 2 weeks ago, why do we, Paul following people, why do we whine? Why do we complain? Why do we get so depressed over this stuff? Why do we let this world get to us so much? Why do I let this Christian lady get to me so much? Well, because I know what she's doing to the... She's deceived and she's deceiving. But there's things in this day-to-day life that really get us down. And we talked about it. I'll just give you the comments here. We try to live in this world happily. Why? Why do we get so miserable? Because we're trying to be happy in this world. Joy? Fine. Happiness? That's hard. The economy, the cost, the relationships we'd like to have based on world definition, the actions that take place out there, what does the world out there do? Why can't we do them? Why can't we go along with them? I mean, the list goes on and on. Another reason that we whine about this stuff is because we partake with the wrong world, with the wrong section. Well, you know, if you can't partake with anybody, if we don't partake with them, we're not going to partake with anybody. Well, that's a tough case, but yes, that's true. We have to learn to live with ourselves and with Christ, with God, with our Bible, and still be out in this world, but we don't have to partake with them, because partaking with them will get us involved and it'll affect us physically and mentally and even spiritually, which we will deal with as we get into these questions here. We find ourselves wanting to wear and to talk and act like they do. We want to live their manner of life. So when you hear this preaching about this stuff about Paul and the way of God more perfectly and all that, we get unhappy about it. Well, why? Because we're starting to wear and dress like and talk like and act like they do. We're starting to live their manner of life again. Or maybe we're just living part of it. It's tough. It's a tough call. Maybe we're so miserable because we're jealous of what they get to wear, of how they talk. They don't fight the talk. They don't have any shame. They have no shame facing this. They have no shame, period. And the way they act, they could care less how they act. They could care less how they look. They could care less about anything that's out there. They care less about their manner of life. So here we come along. We do care about how we look and how we talk and how we act and how our manner of life goes. And as a result, we're jealous of them because they seem to be happier. Well, if we're looking for happiness, you're probably right. We get shamed. We do get embarrassed. And if we don't, we should. But my point is, why are we shamed? Why are we embarrassed by trying to follow the manner of life of Paul? Why are we embarrassed or shamed to be covered? Why are we embarrassed and shamed because we're trying to wear the right thing and do the right thing and say the right thing and not do the stuff we know we should? Why does that embarrass us? Why does that frustrate us? What's going on with us? Well, the conclusion I came to of that sermon a couple of weeks ago is because we forget. We forget about the goodness of God. We find ourselves thinking like the gospel Christians, and we're looking at the severity of God. No, it's the goodness of God. He's provided what He has provided. He did to us, and what He did for us, we tend to forget. So we don't even want to do the reasonable service. Remember, Romans 12, Paul says, listen, to sacrifice this body as a living sacrifice is a reasonable thing. It's just, we could at least wear right, talk right, and don't go with them to do. Why? Because it's all He's asking. He's made it so we're clean. We forget those things. We forget that the next thing we have coming is the rapture or death. So looking at the next thing that comes after, some kind of a departure is the judgment seat of Christ. Now, we all know we're going to have things burn, but we shouldn't have everything burn. So we forget about that stuff, and we start whining about the world's ways and what they're doing, how much fun they're having, and who cares the way they dress, who cares what they do, who cares where they go, who cares if they drink or not. Who cares? I mean, I don't have to do that, but you hang around. There's a reason Paul says to avoid, to withdraw, not have company. There's a reason for that. Okay, so that was a review of something. And so, let's do this here. Let's go into another one that we've done, but we didn't do it very completed. We didn't get through much of it. We just got through some of it. And that is, here's the term, here's kind of the top, that was just a 20-minute, or probably about a 5, 10, 15, yeah, about a 20-minute review of what we've done so far. And if anybody is new to hear this, this is what's in the first three sermons, somewhere along the line, all this, those things in detail. And there is some of what we're going to talk about tonight, and I know we're not going to get through them all tonight, because there's more of them. And here's what we're going to look at. What keeps people from seeing the answers to these issues of life? If we say something to somebody, why don't they get it? What about us? When I say something, if we read our Bible and you hear somebody preach and tell you, why do we remain miserable? What is going on that blocks us from getting this understanding and this joy and this peace? Where is our peace? We know where their peace is. Their peace is in money. their peace is in the flesh, and it doesn't last forever. Now, let's go here to Colossians chapter 1. Let's look at these things again. Now, some of them we've already talked about, but I think because I was either so tired from school or just doing so many things at the end of the year, school stuff, everything but teach, of course. Let's go through this section again. It'll take us a sermon or two to look at these things. What is it that keeps people from seeing having an understanding to these issues of life, including us? Colossians 1:9 tells us this. He says here, "For this cause we also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you." It's one of Paul's prayers. "And to desire that you might be filled with the knowledge of his will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding." So we should be able to look at these daily issues with wisdom, with all wisdom, and have a spiritual understanding to what's going on. So if we have a spiritual understanding, the wisdom will make sense. But reminding ourselves that having a spiritual understanding and applying wisdom to these things, they're going to get mad at you. They're not going to want it. So why don't they get it? As we get it, why don't they get it? Or why do we struggle? Well, here we go. Let's go to 2 Timothy 2:5. 2 Timothy 2:5 says here, 2 Timothy 2:5, I don't want, 2:7, there we go. "Consider what I say, and the Lord give thee understanding in all things." Okay, you want to understand these mysteries of life, these issues of life on a daily basis? You want to get a spiritual understanding, thus wisdom? You just got to consider what Paul says. You don't have to consider what Peter says. Although we learn what Peter says, it adds to our understanding, but we study what Paul says. John, no, John is gospel. Luke, Peter, all these guys. Moses? No. How about Jude? No. Jesus? Well, this is the risen Jesus we're going to by going to Paul. Makes sense. And in Colossians, let's go to Colossians 2. Colossians 2:2, I think it is here. He says, he calls it the full assurance of understanding, the riches of the full assurance of understanding. It's frustrating, but it's true that the more rich we get with understanding, the more enemies we make. The less fun we'll have in this world. Are we strong enough to stand on this stuff? We've got to be. Okay. So, here we go. Let's go. Number one. And if you took notes in the past, throw them away and start over. Here we go. Number one. Here is why people tend to miss an understanding. Now, each one of these isn't everybody, but we're all going to be in this thing. We all have these issues in our life that causes us to fight what we know we shouldn't be fighting and to not understand, why do I not have, why can I not, why should I not go there, why should I have to wear this, why should I, here's why. There's a bunch of reasons. We've got a lot more than we talked about last time. 1 Timothy chapter 6, a very simple one. And I know that I've never had this problem of having too much money, but I've had the love of money. When I was a salesman for Culligan, I needed some money and went out. And by the time I was done, I was a bloodthirsty salesman. It was horrible. It was terrible. So anyway, verse 9. "They that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition." Four, talking about the rich. See, here's why the rich is because they have a love of money. We are all rich in the world's standards. That's why the world is trying to tear America down, because they've been envious of America. They've been envious of the riches. They've been envious of our culture and our comforts, etc., etc. And yet we all know that most of these inventions and most of these cultural improvements that we have as America, we see now how we're destroying ourselves. So he says here, for the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, he erred from the faith. See? And pierced themselves through with many sorrows. This is what happens. This is what's happening to people. This is what happens to me when I get to where I just need some money and I get this love of money thing. See? We will fall into temptation and the snare. We'll have foolish and hurtful lusts because we can afford them. And it drowns men in destruction and perdition. It just ruins them. And as we love money so much, we covet it so much, we'll err from the faith. And the sorrows we have are because we love money. We pierce themselves through with many sorrows. This is what's going on with so many people. This is a simple one. Why do people miss what they're missing? Why do people miss what they're trying to see? And when you try to explain it to them, they're not going to get it because this money thing is a killer. It's their God. Okay, I see somebody said something a while ago. Let me check it out here. Nope. Okay. So, there's the first one. Now he says, but thou, O man of God, you know, he's speaking directly to Timothy. But we are saved. We are following Paul. We are children of the light, as it says. We are his people. So if we're trying to do the right thing and talk to people, we are, similar to Timothy, man of God. But thou, O man of God, O thou Christian, as we are today, flee these things. Flee what things? The love of money. And those sorrows that we have are erred from the faith. Now, it doesn't say erred from faith. It says erred from the faith. Note that. And the foolish and hurtful lust we have, it's because of money. Now, let's just talk about that for a second. And this is going to bother people. We have the wrong people working, for example. And because the women are not in the home, and they're in the workplace, and I'm sure there's jobs out there that women have to do. I mean, women doctors with women patients, I think that's fine. I mean, that's the way it goes, whatever. They can justify anything and everything. But when we realize that women are running everything, have you noticed any commercials, if you watch TV yet, have you noticed that the commercials are now, it's the man that has the problems within the home, and it's the woman that walks in the door and solves everything? I should have written down ones I've seen recently. They're just all, here's the guy, he's at home, here's the guy shopping, here's the guy doing this stuff, here's the guy with the kids, and here comes this marvelous woman coming home with all the answers. It's totally switched, it's totally reversed. Now, what's the problem with that thing? Well, we want money so badly that we'll take the woman out of the house and get her into the workplace so we can live on two incomes, which we can barely do. So the government's forcing that upon us as well. You could do a history of it and the whole thing. You know, go back to the whole kind of stuff. There was an article in the news the other day. Roman Polanski, of all people, you know, the perverted movie director, says that the use of the birth control pill is what has masculinized women. Well, let's forget about the birth control thing. Let's forget about the fact that Roman Polanski is who he is. But even this goomba has noticed that women have become masculine and men have become feminine. So, why? Because it's for the love of money. You've got to have money. You know, just the fact that you need money doesn't mean you love money. But we get to the point where we have to have so much money to cover what we're doing, so we add more to what we're doing, so we need more money. And we become lovers of money like anybody else. And as a result of that, we've got the temptations, we've got the snare. We can't get out of that snare, that cage that we have, because of money. We don't have enough money to get out of that cage. So, you go after this money, and you get to do it so much, you've got to work someplace, ladies, where you really shouldn't be working at all, and you'll err from the faith. And you'll have sorrows, because you know it's wrong. Same thing with the guy. We're the ones that are supposed to learn how to live to work out in this world, that Paul talks about in Corinthians. We'd have to leave the earth if we can't, if we want to live, if we want to work a clean environmental job. But women have their place in the home. Daughters. I could just go on. That thing has been a sore subject for me for so long. So there's number one. Number one. How are we doing for time? Let's go to number two here. Let's go to number two. Let's look at, let's go to Proverbs. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 6. That love of money is just what's killing us all. And again, I thank you folks out there that are sending money to help keep this thing going, because you have no idea how much you're helping this thing keep going. I appreciate it. I know you're doing it for God, not for me, but you're sending it to me, and it's helped immensely here. Oh, Proverbs chapter 6 here. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 6, verse... it's only three pages of where my thumb was at. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 24. This is a big one. I see this more and more today. I'll show you why in a minute. 6:24 talks about to keep you from the evil woman, from the flattery of the tongue of a strange woman. That's a warning, and that's talking about flattery. Flattery. That's where they tell you something that's not true to make you happy about yourself. And I'm telling you, the schools have flattered kids for years. We're lowering grade points. We're lowering grade standards. We tell them that was good, and we know what wasn't, because we want to keep the little kiddies happy. Okay? So keeping that in mind, let's go to Job. Yeah, good old Job 17. And here's what happens with flattery. Even Job knew this way back in those days, or those times. Job 17:15. That isn't what it is. It's 17, Job 17... Job 17:5, maybe? Yes, it's 5. He that speaketh flattery to his friends, even the eyes of his children shall fail. What is that talking about? Well, here's a guy that flatters people, and the eyes of his children, what they see causes them to not see the truth. Flattery does not tell the truth. Now, Here's what's going on. Here's a good answer why Obama is getting away with what he's getting away with. Let's go to Daniel. And the people are buying into it, something fierce. Daniel chapter 11, verse 33. Daniel chapter 11, verse 33. And they that understand among the people shall instruct many, yet they shall fall by the sword and by flame, by captivity and by spoil many days, tribulation here, see? Now when they shall fall, they shall be hopeless with a little help, but many shall cleave to them with flatteries. This whole thing, I think I have another verse, I don't think I wrote it down, I think it's up in verse 36. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation. Flatteries, verse 32, I don't think I read that one, verse 32, there it is. And such as do wickedly against the covenant shall he corrupt by flatteries. But the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. Well, people don't know their God anymore. As we're getting close to this thing, Obama gets what he wants. Obama gets the votes because he flatters the people. And these people don't know their God, so they fall into that thing. Now, what's the big thing about flattery? Go to 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. See, we talked about this one before. But we're just going to kind of cover them all. There's a lot of them we haven't. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, where it says, "For neither at any time," verse 5, "For neither at any time used we flattering words." So Paul doesn't flatter. We have to flatter. We are in so many predicaments that we have to flatter somebody. And flattering is just a fancy name for a lie. Or we use flatteries to pump up somebody. We use flatteries to lie to them to get them to feel good about themselves. We use flatteries to tell people they're good at something when they really aren't. But if you told them they really aren't, we'd be devastated. We are so thin-skinned and so soft. So when you talk to these people out there about these issues of life, that's the whole point here. They're not going to get it because they're so hooked on the money thing. They don't dare get it. Listen, I'm talking to somebody that if he gets this, if he understands this Paul stuff, and he changes his life to try to walk that walk, it's going to ruin his family. It's going to knock them off the path of the moon. Bam, zoom to them, and that's what's going to happen here. So that money thing will keep them from hearing this stuff. And the flattery, telling them the truth about their music, telling them the truth about their loving pastor, instead of flattering about this guy and flattering about this, you know, why do you not tell somebody the truth about why you don't want to do something? You flatter them by going along with them. Well, we do. And now, go to Romans 11:25. Here's what this flattery leads to. This is what I did not talk about in the last one. I was thinking about this the other day. Flattery will lead to something. Romans 11:25. I'll show you what it will lead to. Romans 11:25. Come on, it's right after 10, right before 12. There we go. 11:25. Well, my pages are so thin anymore. 11:25. For I would not, brethren, that ye should be ignorant of this mystery, lest we should be wise in your own conceits. See, here's what flattery does. Flattery makes us wise in our own conceits. Now, in this case, the blindness in part has happened to Israel. Try to tell them this. But this conceit that people have today is because they've been flattered by these pastors about the goodness of this and the goodness of that. They've been flattered by God loves you, and you're doing a great job there, you're a fantastic job there. Your music is fantastic, it's all rhythm, da-da-da-da. But they don't tell them that, they just flattered. Oh, that was really well sung, good concert, good performance. You look nice, you know, and you're dressed immodestly, beyond the shamefacedness level even, and you're terrible. You look sexy. What are you dressing like that for? What are you doing showing what you're showing? And they don't do that. You say, oh, that looks very nice. See, and then these people grow up thinking they're gorgeous, they're smart, they're intelligent. We do this to the kids all the time. And now today, in the school today, at least where I'm at, trying to teach these kids something, they are unteachable because they are so wise in their own conceits. Because they've been flattered through all their elementary school years, their junior high years. Oh, nice, you guys have done good, blah, 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 blah. And now they're not teachable. They're honestly not teachable about morals. They're not teachable about the issues of life that we're talking about here. You can't teach it to them. And not only that, look at 12:16. I don't want 12:16. Romans 12:16. I guess I do, but I don't know why. Well, it says there, yeah, be not wise in your own conceits. There's one other thing I forgot to do the reference, but obviously it leads to pride. If you're wise in your own conceit, you're very prideful. And what is only by what cometh what? Only by pride cometh contention. Ecclesiastes. So why can we not talk to people about this stuff? Because they're wise in their own conceits. They've got their own religion. They've got their unknown God. They've got their flatteries about themselves and God, and they believe that God has teaches them through their feelings and through themselves, and so they're very conceited. They actually think that they're living a good enough life for God to bless them on the outside, although they have such a love for money, they have enough money to do what they want to do, so then they give God the glory for it. In the meantime, it all falls apart, then they get mad at God. And God had nothing to do with it either way. This is what's going on. This is why so many of us, that's why we get to a point where we stay out of this book. We have to have this money so badly, and we follow this flattery baloney by our friends and family. Oh, please come and do this with us. You'd be so fun, Bob. That's flattery. And we get very conceited about ourselves. We get very prideful, and so we are not teachable, and we will argue, and they will argue, and they will contend. And that's why that's two reasons right there why we can't talk to people. Money, the love of money, and they've been flattered all their lives, and they're not teachable. And when they try it, they just get angry, and they're wise in their own conceits. No, this is not immodest. No, I can go there and do this. I can take care of myself. You're wise in your own conceits. That's what's going on here. Let's go to Daniel chapter 11 for number 3. And Paul doesn't use flattery. Now let's go to Daniel chapter 11 again. I didn't write down the verse, so I hope I can find it here. Daniel chapter, I guess this is the whole thing in general here. If you look at Daniel chapter 11 and Daniel chapter 12, here's another reason people are not teachable, and not we cannot explain these mysteries to them, is because the tribulation, I think it's in, I should have a reference for this thing. I shouldn't just be yapping. Let me type it in here. I shouldn't just yap it out. But we're living in a time where people, the government, as bad as they are, continue to talk peace and safety. I'll just type in. I think it's, it might be Thessalonians, actually. It is. 1 Thessalonians 5:3. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them as travail upon a woman. That's when the tribulation goes bonkers. So, if we would go back and we would read Daniel chapter 11 and Daniel chapter 12, we would see some description of things that are starting to take place today. We've got leaders that do not regard the God of the leaders' fathers. We've got leaders that are ignoring the desire of women, and they're teaching the desire. Try to teach this to some teenage girls. The desire of women goes back to Eve in Genesis chapter 3, and the desire of women is supposed to be, still is, but they fight it all the time, is in Genesis 3 where it says, multiply thy sorrow and thy conception, in sorrow thou shalt bring forth children, and thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. Without being a dictator and a jerk, that kind of a thing, following Paul's marriage pattern, not Peter's, et cetera, et cetera. We'll talk about that some other time. But people are living when the tribulation is starting to come around, and it's going to come around peaceably and with safety. So who are we to come around and say, listen, this whole talk about gun control is wrong? Well, why is that so wrong? It's making our country more safe. And we are disarming the world, and it's going to, all this peace is going to come around. Yeah, right. So there's just a quick response why people aren't listening, because they don't think anything's wrong. They think it's fine and dandy. Now, if we go to 2 Thessalonians 2, similarly, 2 Timothy chapter 2, we see, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, we see that this whole tribulation thing is coming in gradually. It's coming in gradually. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. That ye be not soon shaken in mind, or be troubled, neither by spirit, nor by word, nor by letters from us, as that the day of Christ is at hand. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come, except there coming a falling away. And this falling away has been taking a long time. And the only way that you can see that there's been a falling away is to read a King James Bible, which has been around since these words. What God has told us everything from the beginning, I can say, until the end, which is just another beginning. He's done that. So if we want to see how things are going, do a little history. Study American history. Study world history. Well, okay, let's study music history. Okay, let's study the history of the Holy Spirit as it's gone around the world. Let's study biblical history. Let's study the history of godliness as it defines differently. Let's look at let's see what's going on here. What has Christianity done to the world? True Christianity has taken the animal away from man. Look at people there. We're going back to getting undressed. We're going back to poor manners. We're going back to uncouth living. We're going back to rudeness. We're going back to destroy your daughters, your sons, by throwing them out into the animals, into the world. We're going backwards because we don't have true Christianity anymore. Where has it been? It's been around the world. Look at the history of this King James Bible. Where does it come from? Where has it been? You look at all these things, And you're starting to realize that, wow, there's been a falling away for a long time, hasn't there? Yeah, there has, matter of fact. Especially study music. Study music will point that out in detail. It's an amazing thing. So, because apostasy is slow, and people think things are really hunky-dory, even though they don't like Obama, they still voted him in. And even though they don't like the home security thing, it's still going on. And even though they don't like the economy the way it's going, they're still love money. And they're still letting it go on. Okay, let's put a stop right there. We're going to stop right there, point number four. And we'll get into these things. What we're talking about here is, why aren't people going to see these things if we do explain it to them? But we are going to expound on them. We're going to exhort in a way that we hope they would get it. We hope we would get encouraged by it. We'll use plainness of speech, not flattery, and we'll do simplicity and sincerity, because we really mean it. We really want somebody to get this. And when we see them get it, and then they got the struggles and the sorrows because of money, and they sucker into the flattery of this world. They try to get you, every one of your friends and family members tries to get you away from what you believe. They're going to do it with flattery and fun. And you're going to fall for it. Then you got the people that think things really aren't as bad as you say they are. Come on. God loves everyone. He's taking care of us. God's in control of everything, you know. It's a slow process. Okay.